16.
And you guys are kind of looking through. Is there any looking through? Any comments? Any thoughts? We're going to continue with bond valuation today. Bonds are exciting, aren't they?
Yeah, no, not really.
But that's all right. That's all right. We're going to find that today and tomorrow. There's a little bit of excitement with bonds. The Chapter 9 assignment is due on Thursday, so you want to do some bond quotes, looking for bond quotes. And as I said, we're going to get to work on valuation. Oops, what happened? Got the wrong one up. From yesterday's downturn, we actually held up pretty well. We were at what, 6.6 last Thursday, I think? 6.6? More sellers than buyers. Well, if you listen to the people on the news and the internet and the television and the radio, they'll tell you it was continuing fallout from the slowdown in China and gold dropping and commodities dropping and then the terrorist attack in Boston. But the only reason you really know why is because there were more sellers than there were buyers. If there were more buyers than sellers, the price would have gone up. If there's more sellers than buyers, the prices go down. That's how it works. Yeah, that's no question. Okay. Any comments on that? Because you're going to hear people say all kinds of things about why, but do they actually go around and ask each individual seller and buyer why they sold or why they bought? No, it's ridiculous. All you want to know is what's going to happen in 10, 20 years. Are we still going to be around here in 10, 20 years?
Yeah, they will.
Okay. Are we going to have a different system than capitalism in 10, 20 years?
No.
Probably not. Hey, if something better comes along, you know, I'd be happy to check it out. What?
Happy ballots.
Happy ballots?
Ballots.
What is he talking about? Okay. All right. Happy balance. Yeah, that's the tough part, isn't it? That's the really tough part, is to get the balance. All right, so let's start. Now, I gave out four handouts for Chapter 10, and you should each have them. We're going to work on at least one or two today, the worksheets, so you should have these. And were you not here? Didn't you hear me? It takes you one of each of these. But first, this one and that one. And I know I'm giving out more than that. I should just make a bunch. What? Nine. We finished nine. We're doing ten. The first one is a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Nobody has a good joke? You probably got one of each of those. But okay. Anyway. Nobody has a good joke? We don't battle the sexes joke. Did I tell you about the guy with the little red sports car, right? Did I tell you about the assassin?
Yeah.
The assassin, okay. Did I tell you about the woman? You got these from last week.
No, I have this one.
Oh, did I tell you about... What? Did I tell you about the assassin, right? Right?
Yep.
Yeah, I think so. Now, what about the woman who was walking downtown and she sees this a limousine and then two hearses. You know what a hearse is, right?
Yeah.
Carry dead people. And then a line of women marching. 200 women marching behind them. Did I tell you about that? Anyway, so this woman is downtown and she sees this limousine and two hearses and a line of women, 200 long, marching behind it. So she gets in front, she gets up to the first person and starts walking with her. And she says, "What's going on? Is this a parade or is this a funeral?" And the first woman said, "Well, it's kind of both." And she goes, "Well, what happened? What happened? Who's in the limousine?" "Well, that's my dog." "Your dog?" "Yes, she's the woman of the hour. We were celebrating her." "Well, who died?" "Oh, well, the first one is my husband, and the second one is his girlfriend." And the woman said, "What happened?" "Oh, well, my dog caught my husband and his girlfriend in our bed together, and she killed them. She ripped off their throats." And the woman says, "Wow, what a dog. Can I borrow your dog?" And the first woman says, "Get mine."
Wow. That is horrible.
Was that really bad? You didn't like that one? Okay. You haven't been married. You have been married long enough. I mean,
that's just bad.
Is it bad? All right. Sorry. Okay, well, let's get started on bond pricing and yield.
You have to make up for it
after. Yeah. Yeah, I'll try. No, at the end they get a little bit better. Not much. Bond pricing and yield. Bond yield is one of the most important factors in bond valuation. Why? Because over the long sweep of time, what do you get from bonds? Income. That's what people are looking for. Now, there's always the opportunity of capital gains and risk, sometimes a risk of capital losses. But when the bond is redeemed, what are you going to get back? What are you going to get back when the bond is redeemed? You're going to get your money back, $1,000.
What's that fund?
The par value, the face value, the principal, they all mean the same thing. So, given that most all bonds repay their principals without incident, the valuations calculated using bond yields tend to be very predictable, as we're going to see. The unpredictable factor in bond valuation is the future direction of interest rates. And there are people who are paid tremendous sums of money to inaccurately predict where interest rates are going to go. If you're one of the many people who hold on to your bonds until maturity, until you get your face value, your par value, your principal back, you don't care about interest rates. These people are mostly interested in the income and are not generally affected by the direction of interest rates since they have no intention of ever selling their bonds before they mature. You are only concerned about changing interest rates if you intend or unfortunately are forced to sell your bonds before they mature. So there are people out there trying to, you know, buy before interest rates fall, and interest rates go up, they sell and try to wait for interest rates to go down. Good luck is all I can say. Now, we're going to discuss how to calculate the different types of yields. The first yield is very simple, and it's the one that tends to trip people up the most. The nominal yield. What does nominal mean? Nominal. Named, right. The named yield. And that's the easiest one. If somebody says, what's the nominal yield on a 7% bond, what do you say? It's like one of those questions. What's your name, Bob? So what's the nominal yield on a 6% bond? That's it. It's easy. Now, why is it also called coupon yield? Because they used to issue little bitty coupons that you used to cut out and send in when your bond interest was due. The next two take into account the fact that often the bond is selling for not its par value. The current yield, current rate, and the yield to maturity. Now, they're basically very similar calculations. This one gets a little scary and people get upset with it, but it's really not that much more difficult than this guy. And then the yield to call is essentially yield to maturity with a little wrinkle to it. So what we're going to do is calculate those first, and then we'll take a look at taxable equivalent yield and double tax-free, double tax-exempt. So get out your worksheet. Worksheet number one, get out your bond valuation formulas, because we're going to start doing some calculations. Then, what? It says worksheet number one. Worksheet number one. Yes, I gave them out to you last Thursday. You know what they really want us to do? I don't know if you know this, but the college wants us to have you put these all on black and blue boards. Well, I have them on my website. But they want you to print them out before you come. I know. Who's going to do that? The A students sitting in the front of the class, they're going to do that. The rest of the students are going to do it. I think your website was down. The coupon yield, the nominal rate. It's amazing how stupid the millennials get when it comes to... They're so, you millennials, you're so technically adroit when it comes to anything. But when it comes to school, I can't navigate the website. But you can make farce book. What? The website was down, yeah. I got that a lot before I changed to Wonder Professor. They couldn't spell my last name. Because it was the college website /tilde. Find that on the keyboard. Many people can't find the tilde. It's near the escape key, this one right here. This is what my website used to be. Well, you can still use it. It'll just direct you to the other one. And they would go, oh, I think your website's down. Because they couldn't find the tilde key, and then they couldn't put three vowels right in a row. What? It's in most keyboards, it's in the upper left-hand corner. Upper left. I'll show it to you. In the upper. Well, it's not, it depends. Some they move it. In laptops, you never know where it is, but it's in most keyboards, it's in the upper left. So the nominal yield is the named interest rate. If you have a par value of 1,000, and we always will in this class, as we said, some bonds have par values of 5, 10,000. Forget those. Most all bonds use 1,000. That's what we're going to use. So if it's an 8% bond, it's going to pay $80 a year, actually $40 twice each year. The current yield, the nominal yield is not as important as the current yield, yield to maturity, and yield to cost. Now, the current yield is the amount of current income a bond provides relative to its market price. So what is it currently paying us, given that we're probably going to pay more than $1,000 a premium bond or less than $1,000? The yield to maturity is the fully compounded rate of return earned by an investor over the life of the bond, because it includes the price appreciation if we buy a discount bond and the price depreciation if we buy a premium bond. And the yield to call is the same as the yield to maturity, except it assumes that the bond is going to be called. And we'll see that in a bit. But first, let's take a look at current yield. The calculation is very simple. We take the annual interest, and some of you might have already seen this in the 121 class, and divide it by the market price. And that tells us what the bond is actually paying currently. If you have an 8% bond, but it's selling at $800, we don't have to pay $1,000 for it, even though that's the face value. The discount bond is selling at $800. If you take $80 and divide that by $800, you get 0.10 or 10%. So this bond, that nominal yield is 8%, the nominal yield, the coupon yield, is based on the face value of $1,000. But if we're able to buy that bond for $800, remember the Ford bonds that had fallen in price? We're currently getting 10%. Make sense?
Yeah.
Nod your head yes or go, hell no. Well, try it. Use your calculator, take 80 and divide it by 800, and you get 10%. The nominal yield, the coupon yield is 8%, but because the bond is selling at a discount, the current yield is actually 10%. Now, what happens? Hello? There we go. So, hold on with this thing. What? Your 99 cent calculator, that's why you're supposed to buy four of them. Maybe they're bad photons in here. You need better photons. Okay, what happens if it were selling at a premium? What happens if that bond were selling for $1,200? If we had to pay $200 more than the par value? Well, then we would have $80 divided by 1,200, or 0.066, you know, whatever, 6.67%. Make sense? The nominal yield is again 8%, but because the bond is selling at a premium, the current yield is only 6.67%. All right, let's do number one. Yes?
So, the company is the owner of the bond, right? The corporate bond.
The company is the issuer of the bond.
Right.
The person who owns it is the investor.
Right. So, before they give it to the investors, do they decide if they want to sell it at a premium or a discount?
No, they're going to sell it at
$1,000. Or.
They're going to pick, well, they're going to try. They're going to say, okay, interest rates are 7%. So, let's issue these bonds at $1,000 paying 7%. Now, if in between the time that they say we're going to issue those and the bonds actually are sold, interest rates change, they might do better, they might do worse. They might wind up selling it for more, they might selling it for less. If interest rates change quickly on them. But normally, no, they're going to sell for $1,000. Make sense?
Right. If I own the bond and I want to put it out for the market, then I can decide if I want to sell a premium.
Right. If interest rates have fallen, you're going to demand a premium for your bond. You're going to say, hey, you know, interest rates are down to 5%. This bond's paying 7. You pay me more than $1,000. And if it's in the face value, if interest rates have gone up, then you're going to have to accept less. That's it. That's it. It's that simple. Although it drives people nuts. Questions? Okay, number one. A bond that pays 9% is currently priced at $1,200. What's the nominal interest rate? Everyone wants to say 9%. Wait till I ask you. A bond that pays 9% is currently selling at $1,200. What's the nominal interest rate? Yeah. Now, what's the current interest rate? Well, what's the annual interest of a 9% bond?
$90.
Everyone say $90. I want you to be. Well, as soon as you do. He's right. But what's the annual interest on a 9% bond?
$90.
Blanca, what's your number one? Okay. What's the annual interest on a 4% bond?
$4.
Come on, say it. Because some of you on the test are going to do this. You're going to put 9 cents. And I'm going to go, why didn't you answer me when I asked you? You think I might be crazy. You might be right. But when you say things, when I ask you the question, you're going to hear them in your head when you have to think it yourself. So what's the annual interest on a 9% bond? Everybody.
$90.
You're going to put 9 cents? If you put 9 cents, what do you get? Sabapo. Dope slap. Douche. So $90 divided by what's the market price?
$1,200.
So what's the current yield for the bond? 0.075 or 7.5%. Now you can write it either way. I don't care. But if you do change it to percentage, do it right. And some of you have a really hard time rounding. You really don't round very well. What would 7.5% round to? 8% or 7%? 8%. Yeah, okay. So some of you have a real hard time rounding. And it makes all of us at Southwestern look bad.
They learned.
No, they did. They refused to learn. I'm not going to learn it. You can't teach it to me. Okay. The yield to maturity now takes into account the price appreciation of the bond if the bond is purchased at a discount, or the price depreciation of the bond if the bond is purchased at a premium. Remember, we bought this thing for $800. But what's it going to be worth when it's redeemed? Thank you. What's it going to be worth when it's redeemed? Everyone should say
$1,000.
Wait till I ask you. We bought it for $800, but when it's redeemed, what are we going to get back?
$1,000.
If we bought it for $1,200, what are we going to get back when it's redeemed? That's how it works. And as we saw in chapter 9, as you get closer and closer to the maturity date, it gets closer and closer to $1,000. You remember that graphic? Go back and look it over again. There are two primary methods of calculation, and there are a couple others, but we're going to use the simplest one that, at least when I took the Series 7, that's what they ask you to use. And then there's a more accurate method, which we use spreadsheets for. The yield to maturity formula in the next slide gives you a pretty darn good approximation. It looks scary, but once it's explained to you, it's actually fairly easy to use. There's the formula. So on your formula sheet and on the handout for chapter 10, you see the formula. And in reality, folks, it's the same formula. Remember we had the annual interest for current yield divided by the market price? Well, instead of the annual interest divided by the market price, what we're doing now is we're taking the annual interest and dividing it by the average of the $1,000 par value and the market price. Because When we bought it, it was worth the market price. When it's redeemed, it's worth the par value. And then we add this next little bad boy here to take into account that every year we're going to get closer and closer and closer to 1,000. Either from below, if it's a discount bond, or from above, if it's a premium bond. So it looks scary, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
But it's not that hard once you start plugging in the numbers. So it's the annual interest, and instead of dividing it by the market price, we divide it by the average of the par value and the market price. If you add two numbers and divide by two, what do you get? When you take two numbers and divide it by two, you get the average. I have some of these questions. You think, what are we asking? What's your name, Bob? Now we add to that this other term, which is taking the par value and subtracting the market price and then dividing by the number of years until the bond matures. And what that does is that takes into account the fact that every year we're going to either add a little bit if it's coming from 800, from below, from a discount bond, or every year we're going to subtract a little bit as it gets closer and closer from above as a premium bond. So let's take a look at the example here. It's the same bond, the 8% bond priced at $800, but now we know it's maturing in 10 years. Got it? So we know that this bond in 10 years is going to give us $1,000 back. So how do we do the calculation? What's the annual interest on an 8% bond? $80. My nerves. What's the annual interest on an 8% bond?
$80,
right. So you're not going to put 8 cents, right? Don't do this. Don't do that. Because that would be if it were a dollar bond. This is a $1,000 bond. 8% of 1,000 is how much? Please answer me.
$8.
It's difficult. 8% of a $1,000 bond is?
$8.
And then we're going to divide that by the par value. The par value in this class will always be
$1,000.
The market value, the problem tells us, is?
$800.
The market value, the problem tells us, is? Answer me over there. And then we divide that by 2 because we're getting the average. What's the average of 1,000 and 800?
900,
right? 1,900 divided by 2, your calculator should say that that's 900. Make sure. 1,900 divided by 2, if you don't believe, 1,800. I'm sorry, can't take a joke? 1,800 divided by 2. I can't add. That's why you guys have the calculator. Now, this little puppy up here. What's the par value? Everyone should say 1,000. What's the par value? What's the market value? And how many years until it matures? So what's 1,000 minus 800? Divided by 10? So every year, for the next 10 years, we're going to add $20 to the price of the bond. We're going to basically receive $20 every year as the bond gets closer and closer to the maturity date. Because when the bond reaches maturity, we're going to get $1,000. We only had to pay $800 for it. You make sense? So it looks scary, but once you piece it apart, it's not really that difficult. So what's 80 plus 20? 100 divided by 900. What is that? 0.1111 or by 11.1%. Questions? Thoughts? Okay, what's 800 minus, what's 1,000 minus 800? 200 divided by how many years?
By
10 years. And that's $20 a year. That's all it's saying. I know it looks scary, but it's actually. Now, are we really going to get $20 every year?
No.
No. Well, no, we're not even going to get that. What the formula is assuming is that interest rates basically stay the same. But remember, interest rates are changing all the time. So the price of the bond could actually go lower if interest rates kept falling. I'm sorry, if interest rates kept rising. Or the price of the bond could get much higher if interest rates were to fall. This is an approximation. Make sense? But because bonds are so predictable, for the most part, it's actually pretty close to what we're going to get. That's the yield to maturity. All right, now let's take a look at the next one. And then you can see you're really excited about this. Where did I get the what?
The 800 up to the...
The 800?
No, the 100.
What's $80 plus $20?
Oh,
800. Come on, use your calculator. Okay, the next one. Move the cube up. Over here. The next one is the same formula, but now, instead of a discount bond, we're using a premium bond. So let's do this one. And I have to go get some more crayons. It's an 8% bond, so what's the annual interest?
$80.
You put 8 cents, you get a sapapo. Okay, what's the par value? And what did we have to pay for this bond? It's a premium bond, so we have to pay $1,200, and we divide that by 2. And then up here, what's the par value? 1,000. The market value is? And it's a 10-year bond. So let's do the easy part. 1,000 plus 1,200 is? 2,200 divided by 2, 1,100. Now, 1,000 minus 1,200. Negative 200. Ah, negative numbers! Yeah, you just, I know, well, that's what some people do. They get, So 1,000 minus 1,200 is? Divide that by 10 is? Negative 20. And 80 plus a negative 20 is 60. Everybody understand that?
Yeah.
Or go, no. Blanca, make sense?
Divided by 10, so we can
fit. I'm sorry? What did he say? Okay. So 60 divided by 1,100 is 0.0545545.45%. Okay, make sense, everybody? Yeah? Okay, now, so let's do problem number 2. Let's do problem number 2. A 9% 20-year bond has a par value of $1,000 and a call price of $1,050. It is callable in 5 years. The bond is currently selling for $1,110. Calculate the current yield, yield to maturity, and the yield to call this bond. Well, we really do not have... Well, let's forget the current yield. Oh, I just did that. Right. We don't do the current yield because we did that in problem 1. Let's do the yield to maturity. So, we used to have a whiteboard over there, but they took it away. Figure that one out. Notice how much people use this. Okay, so it's a 9% bond, 20 years. Par value will always be 1,000. And a call price, and we'll come back to that, at 2050. Remember, if they want to call it away from us, they have to pay us a premium of $50. So here's the face value, will always be 1,000. And it is callable in 5 years. And the market price is that's what I was looking for. $1,110 market price. So you calculate the current yield on your own. It's on the website. There's a commentary and answer sheet. But let's do the yield to maturity. The yield to maturity is equal to the annual interest. Everybody, what's the annual interest on a 9% bond?
$90.
And then we divide it by the average of the face value and the market value. So the face value will always be 1,000. Everyone can say 1,000. What's the face value always be? And what's the market value?
$1,110,
because the problem told us that. We divide, add those two and divide by two. And then the bad boy that drives people nuts is we take 1,000, the face value. Yeah, Victor's hanging on the work. Victor will do it. What do I do? Market price minus, right, the minus, market price minus the market value, and divide that by how many years until it matures? 20 years. So the numbers are a little trickier, but they're not that bad. If we take $1,000 plus $1,110, what do we get? Come on, calculators, move! I want to see your fingers moving. 2110 divided by 2. What do you get? 1055. Okay. Now, what's 1,000 minus 1110? -110 divided by 20. Negative. Should be 5.5. -5.5. So in other words, every year we're taking away $5.50. $90 plus a -5.5. $84.50. Why do you guys, don't you have to calculate? You should use your calculators. So take $84.50 divided by 1055, and what is this yield to maturity? 8.01. Got it? Percent. Okay, good. Now we're going to do the exact same thing, except, I'm sorry, wait a minute. The current yield on our 8% discount bond selling at 800 was 10%, but the yield to maturity was 11.1. So, what? 8% bond, but selling at $800 was its current yield of 10%, but the yield to maturity is 11.1. And the current yield on our 8% premium bond was 6.67%, but the yield to maturity was actually 5.45%. What's going on? Well, it's actually very straightforward. The discount bond was purchased at 800, but will be redeemed at 1,000. The premium bond was purchased at 1,200, but again, we'll redeem it at $1,000. The yield to maturity takes into account the bond appreciation for the discount bond and the bond depreciation for the premium bond. You see? Yes or no? Mm-hmm. Make sense? We're currently getting 10% from our discount bond, but because we're going to get $1,000 when the bond matures, we actually wind up getting a yield to maturity of 11.1%, more than the 10% current yield. If we're buying a premium bond, we're currently getting 6.67, but because we ain't going to get $1,200 when the bond matures, we're only going to get $1,000, it's only giving us, if we hold it for the full, whatever it is, 10 years, 5.45%. Okay, let's keep going. Alright, the yield to call. The yield to call takes into account the possibility of the bond being called away from us. Now, we would only use this with premium bonds. Why? Because a bond issuer would not call in the bonds if interest rates have risen. Right? It wouldn't make any sense. It would be like refinancing your house. You're paying 6%. Oh, interest rates have risen to 9%. I'll refinance. You wouldn't do that. And the same thing is true for the bond issuers. If interest rates have fallen, they'll say, sure, let's call in the bonds and refinance at a lower rate. They would not call in the bonds for a discount bond because that means they'd be refinancing at a higher rate. So it's only for premium bonds. Yes?
Refinance it after they're taking them back and then restarting?
Yeah. Maybe they pay them off. But no, what they usually do is they say, okay, come here, bonds. You know, here's a $50 million or $500 million bond issue. They call that in and they reissue them at a lower interest rate. Just as a homeowner is going to pay off their mortgage by refinancing. Make sense? And you'd do the same. If you had a 20% credit card and somebody offered you a 10% credit card, what would you do? Right, you'd pay off the 20% with the 10% credit card and start paying lower interest rates. That just makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, that's what, you know, in that reason, yeah, the numbers are bigger, there's more zeros afterwards, but it's the same idea. So, the what yield to call takes into account the possibility of the bond being called. There are two methods of calculations, and the bond pricing formula we're going to take a look at later using the spreadsheet, and then the yield to maturity. It's the same formula, except what we do is replace the par value with the call price, and the years to maturity with the years to call. So what you find out is that the thing looks exactly the same, except we've changed the par value in its two places to call value. Because when the bond is called away from us, they're going to have to pay us that premium, if there is one. If they're callable at par, then it'll be the same, because it'll be the same number. And instead of the number of years until maturity, we do the number of years until it is called. So it's the same formula, except in this case, the 8% bond that was selling at a premium is callable in 5 years. The example over there, it's going to be redeemed in 10 years. But now we find that the company can call them in 5 years, or the municipality, or whatever. And so we're going to replace the 10 with a 5, and they have to pay us an extra $85. That's the call premium. They have to pay.
Right.
But it would on the advertisement, it would be callable at 108.5, and you have to move the decimal point over. That's so that you can't understand what they're talking about. So instead of $1,000 face value, they're going to have to pay us $1,085, and if you plug in all the numbers, you wind up with 0.049891 or 4.99%. And it turns out it's actually lower than the yield to maturity. Why? Because they were called away from us prematurely and we didn't get to take advantage of the higher interest rates. The yield to call was less than the yield to maturity. Yeah, it's typical. This is because if the bonds are called away, we have less time to take advantage of the higher interest income payments. So, on that. Do you want non-callable or callable bonds?
Non-callable.
You'd rather have non-callable. So, before we go on to taxable, let's finish up with problem number 2. There it is. Zoom. Okay. Alright, so, problem number 2 is all this data here, but the difference is now, we have a. Let's use the black. All right. So the difference here is we're going to use the call price, and we're going to use the fact that in 5 years the bond is callable. So what's the annual interest on a 9% bond? Music to my ears. And we divide it by, instead of the par value divided by the call price, because we're going to get $1,085. We're not going to get the $1,000 market price. I mean, base value. They have to pay us. I'm sorry. What's the call price here? $1,050. Can you take a joke? I just wanted to see. I know.
You got me all confused here.
Well, it's my job. I wanted to see if you're on the ball. Torturing students for fun and profit. Spreading strife is my greatest joy. Okay, so $1,050 plus, what's the market price? $1,110 divided by 2, the average. And then here, we use, instead of the face value, call value. Minus the market price divided by how many years? Not the 10 years or 20 years that it matures, but the 5 years until it is callable, until the call protection period is over. So let's do that. 1050 plus 1110 divided by 2 is?
1080.
1080?
Yes.
You sure?
Yes.
Okay. You guys got the calculator. All right. 1050 minus 1110 is minus 60. 60 divided by 5 is negative 12. 90 plus a negative 12. 78 divided by 1080. 7.22%. Yeah, when you divide a negative by a positive, you still get a negative. If you divide two negatives... No. You got to divide by 5 first. You got to divide by 5 first. Then you... So that gives you negative 12. 90 plus a negative 12 is 78. If you have trouble with the arithmetic, this is not math, by the way. This is arithmetic. Okay, make sure the distance. Math is when the numbers disappear. And you get X and Y and lambda and sigma. What? We don't use lambdas here, and X and Y and theta and cosine. Yeah, that's a lot of trigonometry. But in other words, it's a subtle distinction. This is arithmetic. There's no symbolic. We're not doing any algebra. Yeah, we're just. No, it's not. It's not really algebra. There's no solving for anything. Okay. Statistics. Yes. Right. Okay. Any questions? Okay. Let's continue. What is the meaning of 42? Did you read the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? No. All right, now, when we enter the world of muni bonds, we enter the world of tax-exempt, tax-free. IRS doesn't like it when you use the word tax-free, but I don't care. Muni bonds are free from federal taxes. So in order to effectively compare muni bonds to other bonds, we need to compute the taxable equivalent yield. There are some bonds that are double tax-free. If we buy, for example, we live in California, if we buy a muni bond based in California, anywhere in the state, up and down the state, school district, water authority, bridge authority, state or local governments, we do not pay federal income tax. We don't pay any federal income tax. And thank you. And we do not pay state income tax. Question?
Would you buy a bond in the state that has...
No, California is going to... If you're a California resident, California is going to say, pay us. Because California can tax Arizona, can tax Guam, can tax New York. But the feds can't tax California. The feds can't tax Arizona. And they're talking about changing it in Congress as we speak now with the tax reform. It's part of the Constitution. I don't know how they're going to get around it. The Supreme Court, I think it was over 200 years ago, basically said the feds can't tax the states. The states can't tax the feds. And what?
Civil war.
Yeah. But they have an example. There have been ways that they've gotten around it. There are some muni bonds which are taxable if you are eligible or are affected by the alternative minimum tax. Not all, but a few. And I don't know how they get around it, but the court said okay. But first, you have to be eligible for the AMT, which means you have to be making over $140,000, $130,000, have kids, and high tax paid or whatever, making more than that. So yeah, you have to be careful about that if you're in that situation, which I don't feel too bad. Okay? All right, so let's take a look at the formula now for taxable equivalent yield. And this, again, is on your valuation formula. The muni bond yield divided by 1 minus your marginal tax rate. So if you are getting a 6% bond, how much interest is that? Right, a 6% bond is paying you $60 of interest. You take the muni bond yield, which is 6%, divided by 1 minus your marginal tax rate. Well, what is your marginal tax rate? It depends upon how much you make. And it turns out that the higher the marginal tax rate, the better muni bonds there are for you. And that's why for most people, we're not interested. Most of us working grunts. If you have a lot of money, you're making a lot of money off of interest, then it makes sense. Yeah? Yeah, corporate bonds are usually a better deal for the working grunts because we're not paying as high taxes as the people in the 35, 39% tax bracket. Yes? Pinky up. Yes, pinky up. Don't nabby. Okay, so let's say we're in the 25% tax bracket, which is once you get into the middle, upper middle class, you're probably paying 25 cents on every dollar that you make, the next dollar you make. So 0.06 divided by 1 minus 0.25. Everybody understand how we got from year to year? Yeah? Go like this if you don't. You don't need to say any words. And then that's 0.06 divided by 0.75, and that is 0.08 or 8%. So what would you rather have? A municipal bond paying 6% or a corporate bond fully taxable at 8%? For you, if you're in the 25% tax bracket, they're equivalent. Well, wait a minute. Rachel's got that look on her face. How much interest are we getting from this guy? Everyone should say $60. How much interest are we getting from this guy? $80. Wouldn't you rather have $80? This one's fully taxable. And what's your tax rate? What's your marginal tax rate? So multiply 80 times 25%. How much are you paying in taxes? 80 minus 20 is? So you see how these are equivalent? That's why we use the term taxable equivalent yield. If the bonds are of similar quality, you would not care if you got the $80 from the bond, from the corporate bond, or the $60 from the muni bond, because you're basically getting the same amount after taxes. Make sense? Okay, good. Now, if we buy a bond in California, because we're California residents, we will not pay the federal tax. We will also not pay the state income tax. So if the muni bond is free of both federal and state income taxes, then the taxable equivalent yield will be higher. We used a slightly different formula than we do in the financial planning class. And this formula assumes that the person that we're talking about is itemizing their deductions on their federal income taxes. And this is very typical for muni bond investors. Muni bond investors usually have a lot of property, and they're itemizing deductions, and they give a lot to charity, and so they get to take their state income taxes off of their federal income taxes. They get to itemize those. If you don't itemize, which would be unusual for somebody in that tax bracket, then it's actually going to be an easier formula, and it's going to be higher. But let's use the one here. It's the muni bond yield. Oops, wrong color. The muni bond yield in this case 6%, 1 minus, now here's where it gets tricky. We're going to do the same one, the federal rate, in this case it's 25%. But we then have to subtract, add to that, the state rate of, let's assume that they're in the 8% California bracket. But because we're able to reduce our federal taxes by what we pay in state taxes, and if you know what I'm talking about, don't worry about it. It's part of your Schedule A when you itemize your taxes. You multiply that times 1, again, minus the federal rate. So it looks tricky, but it's actually just a matter of working through the numbers one at a time. 1 minus 0.25% is 0.75%. 0.08 times 0.75. You calculator fans? 0.06. What's 0.25 plus 0.06? 0.31. 1 minus 0.31 is? Let's hear from you! Well, if the person's in, if they're in the 25% federal bracket, they're probably either in the 6% or the 8% California bracket, because the brackets don't match. So I just assume they're in the higher one. I put them in the 8%. So the problem will tell you that. Because remember, it depends on you. It depends on who you are. And so this is 0.06 divided by 0.69, or 0.086957, 8.7%. So the taxable equivalent yield of 8% for the bond that we bought from Illinois or Nevada or wherever, if we bought it from California, would be giving us 8.7% if we were in the 25% federal bracket and 8% California bracket. Yeah. Yeah, because what you're doing, essentially, if you take that away, you're dividing it by 1, by 100%. So, and think about it. If you divide something by 1, what do you get? You get the same thing. So if you're paying no taxes whatsoever, boom, there it is. But we're paying 25 cents to the federal government. So we have to pull that away, and then if we're paying to the state government, we also have to pull that away too. But, to make life a little interesting, whatever state taxes you pay to the feds, I mean, whatever state taxes you pay to California, you get to deduct that from your federal taxes. If you've never done Schedule A, you don't know what I'm talking about, but once you become a homeowner, the Schedule A is your friend because you get to deduct all that mortgage interest. Yes?
Okay, so let's say investors from another country, will they get taxed by the federal government plus their own government?
Wow. Well, the easy answer is yes. The United States is going to claim jurisdiction, and they're going to have to pay United States taxes first, and then their country, assuming it's not North Korea, Cuba, or Iran, their country is going to have a reciprocal agreement with the United States and say, what? Venezuela. No, we still have diplomatic relations with Venezuela. We have not embargoed. In fact, we buy a lot of their oil. Our companies are one of the few companies that actually deal with their oil. Their oil is very dirty. Not good oil. Well, what does that mean? It's got a lot of processing to do. What?
Valero.
Yeah, that's the big one. Yeah. And so they have to, we're one of the few countries that actually can buy their oil. Because we can deal with their grunt. What would you rather have? It's called light sweet crude. Light sweet. Now, doesn't that sound tasty? Light sweet crude. Yeah, and something, what? Something you put in your coffee, right? Okay, so where was it? Oh, right. So if you make money from you're a foreigner, you're in Mexico, and you buy a United States bond somewhere in the United States. United States is first going to say, pay us. And then Mexico is going to say, okay, how much did you pay the states? Oh, great, you don't owe us anything. Or you didn't pay enough, you owe us more. The same thing is true if you make money in another country, you're going to get a foreign tax credit. Because the other country is going to say, you know, pay us first, we claim jurisdiction. And then the United States will say, how much did you make? How much did you pay to Mexico or whatever country? You get a credit. You get a foreign tax credit. Exactly. Now, if it were a muni bond, that's a very good question. I don't know what would happen. I don't know if for a muni bond, the United States is going to say, hey, we can't tax California. But Mexico will say, well, we can. I don't know. I've never done somebody in Mexico's tax return, so I cannot tell you the truth. So somebody might want to look that up. Don't look too excited. What? I've done foreign tax credits for people here. Pretty easy, because they tell you how much you pay to the foreign countries, and then you put it on the tax return. It's that simple.
But if you owe money for the states, because you didn't pay enough in Mexico, you pay in pesos?
Probably not. Probably not. You put a dollar to go down. You want the dollar to go down because you get more pesos. Your pesos will buy more dollars. Okay, so let's do the... How are we doing here? All right, now, how are we doing? Okay, let's do the calculation for number three. Okay, bing! All right. A married couple from California is in the 35% tax bracket. Now, how much are they making if they're in that tax bracket? You know? Over 300 and some thousand. Yeah, 300,000. And they're in the 11% California bracket, which means they're at the top of the bracket. They're considering a 5% Arizona bond, a 4.5% California bond, and a 7% corporate bond. Make sense? Now, just looking at those, could you determine which one is paying the best interest rate? It looks like the corporate, isn't it? But the corporate, we have to pay taxes on. It is fully taxable. Well, we'll see. Okay, just hang on a minute. We'll see which ones after we do the calculations. Now, do you do any calculation for the corporate bonds? You should leave it the way it is. If you do any calculations in the corporate bond, what will you get? Supapo. Okay, because the corporate bond is already taxable. So don't do any calculations for the corporate. You're not the only one. Okay. So don't do any calculations for the corporate bond. What is the Arizona bond? Is it federal tax-free or federal and state tax-free? Just federal, because this is a California couple. They live in California. How about the California bond? The California bond is going to be federal and state tax-free because the state of California says to investors, hey, if you live here and you buy a bond from somewhere in California, we'll waive, not this waive, we'll forego, we'll give up the interest income tax. We won't charge you any income tax on interest you make. Make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so what formula do we use for the Arizona bond? The Fed only formula, which is the muni bond yield divided by 1, that's 100% or 1, minus the federal bracket of, you're letting Victor have all the fun, 35%. So how do we write that? 0.05 divided by 1 minus 0.35. So that's 0.05 divided by 0.0769. Make sure you round correctly. You can put all the numbers there in your calculator and you never go wrong if you do that. Is that right? Is that what you got, folks? 7.69%. So right off the bat, who do we know is better already? The Arizona has already eclipsed the corporate bond, because this is paying us on a taxable equivalent basis 7.69%. We have to go out and find a corporate bond paying 7.69% to get a better rate than what the Arizona bond is giving us. Now, for the California bond, we do not pay federal income taxes, nor do we pay state. So which formula do we use? You let Victor say it again. Which formula do we use? Fed and state. So the California bond is paying 4.5%, and we divide that by 1 minus the federal rate plus, federal rate's 35%. State rate is?
11%.
Everyone say 11%. See, if I don't hear you, I think you're lost. I don't hear you talking to me. I think, what is he, I don't know what he's talking about. What good does it do us to sit here and do all this if you don't know what you're doing? What's the California?
11%.
And then what we have to do is we have to multiply that by 1 minus the federal rate of 35%. And I know it looks scary, but you just do the calcs. Because this is 0.35, this is 0.11, 0.35. So 1 minus 0.35.
Oh,
0.65. 11%, 0.11 times 0.65. What does your calculator tell you? 15. And then that is added to the 35%, 0.35. And then we work our way out, subtract 1 minus that, 0.5785. Is it really that difficult, folks?
No.
I want to make sure, because I don't hear people talk. I do. What are you talking about? And so what do we do here? That's 4.5%. Which is 0.045, and if you don't understand that, come see me after class. We'll work on that. And so what is the California bond paying us?
0.077.
So 7.7. Good enough. So the California bond is paying us 7.78%. So the California bond winds up being the most lucrative bond for the high income, high tax. Okay, and of course the worksheet number 2 is on the back, so you have some stuff to do over the next couple of days. Bud? I'm sorry? What do you say? No, the homework is essentially the same thing. The homework is just more of the same, and so, without my help. Okay, let's spend a couple of time talking, a little bit of time talking about yield spreads. That's part of what I asked you actually in this Chapter 9 assignment. Questions? Okay. Differences in interest rates that exist among various sectors of the bond market are called spreads. The spread, the difference. Remember the spread between the bid and the ask price in stocks? Same idea, but now we're talking about interest rates. The shorter the maturity, the lower the rate in general. The longer the maturity, the higher the rate. If you have ever shopped for mortgages, you know that a 30-year mortgage is going to cost about 0.5% more than a 15-year mortgage. That's just a fundamental truism about interest rates. The longer the money's out there, the more they're going to want because of various reasons. The higher the rating of the bond, the lower the interest rate and vice versa. Just as, you know, if you have a very good credit score, you're going to pay less interest than somebody with a bad credit score. And treasuries carry the lowest rates. Muni bonds come next, with general obligations bond generally paying lower than revenue bonds, because revenue bonds have to, they have to come up with the revenue or they don't pay. General obligation bonds, the city has to pay no matter what, or the state or whatever. And then the corporate bonds at the bottom of the list, having to pay the highest interest rate because they're corporations and they can go bankrupt. And non-callable being more desirable than callable, so paying less interest. So here is, as of the 26th of March, if you go on Yahoo, you're going to see the spreads. And it's amazing what interest rates are paying now, folks. They're just, it's so low. It's been a 3 month, 0.04. Well, you did this in chapter one. This is, they're not treasury bonds. They label them all bonds, but these are bills. Here are the notes, the 2-year, the 3-year, the 5-year, 10-year. It's actually gone down since then. It's like 1.7 something. It's gone down. Can you imagine locking in your money for 10 years at less than 2%? Yeah, it does. I don't want anything to do with it. And I, at my age, I really should be buying more bonds. Like, forget it. I'm not touching the darn thing. 10-year, the 30-year bond, 3%. Locking in your money for 30 years. If inflation stays at around 3%, which is what it's been over the last 30-some-odd years, it's actually a little lower now, it's about 2%. But if it stays, it goes back up to its average of 3%. Heaven forbid it go above 3%, then your money's basically losing money. And these people are locking in their money for 30 years at 3%. And then corporate bonds ain't that much better. 10-year AAA, 2.5. 10-year A, 3. 20-year. And there's the link to look at today. Let's see what the 10-year now is. 10-year, I thought it went down to 1.78 or something. Where is it? No, 1.82. I'm sorry. 1.82. Yeah, so poof. Still poopy. Poopy, poopy, poopy. Often investors will speak about the bond spreads as being tight or wide. A tight spread means the interest rates among the bonds they are evaluating are very close to one another. Treasury's paying 4.8%, corporate's paying 5.1%. A wide spread means there is a big difference between the bond interest rates. Treasury's paying 3.2, corporate's paying 8.2. And they don't use percentage points. One percentage point is 100 basis points. It drives me insane, right? Instead of just saying 100th, you know, 100th of an interest rate, they say one basis point. 50 basis points. Instead of saying 0.5%, they say 50 basis points.
That's cool.
It's just more the same. We want to make sure you don't understand, you, the common layperson, don't understand what we're talking about, so we use something that nobody else uses, and everybody goes, woo. What?
Fetch?
What did he say?
So fetch.
Making sure I understand what he's talking about. Right. For several years, bond yields were very tight, and then during the 2008-2009 turmoil, they widened to distances that had not been seen since the Great Depression. People were so frightened that the world was going to end, they bought treasury bonds, which lowered the price. Right, lowered the interest rate, raised the price, I'm sorry, lowered the interest rate to, as we saw in that graph on Thursday, and corporate bonds, they dumped the corporate bonds, which raised the what they were paying. The yield spreads were huge. And anybody, as we saw with the Ford bonds, if you had enough gumption to think that the world wasn't going to end and bought those bonds, you did pretty well, because now the spreads are tight again. They have narrowed significantly to what we just saw, where corporates are paying 4% and the Treasury is paying 3%. It's still very tight. So here's the effect of inflation on bond rates. And it's not the best graph, but you see starting in 1960 that bonds were paying about 4%. Inflation was running about 1.5%, 2%.
And those corporate bonds?
This is... No, that's the 10-year. It's a 10-year treasury. It's a 10-year treasury. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure it doesn't say, but I'm pretty sure it's a 10-year treasury. So I remember in 81, the 10-year treasury hit 14%. I'm pretty sure it's a 10-year treasury. So you started with 4%, and then you see inflation taking hold in the 1970s. Inflation skyrocketed, and the 10-year treasury hit 14%. many of you weren't even alive then, but 1981, the prime rate hit 22, just for a couple of weeks, and mortgage rates hit 17%. What are they now? 3.5. Yeah, 3.5. You can get, if you buy an adjustable, you can get 2.5. But it was a very scary time, and people were really frightened. But what had happened is Paul Volcker, who's still around, he's working for Obama, the socialist, Paul Volcker, Republican, and he told Jimmy Carter, yes, we did have a president named Jimmy, believe it or not, folks, I know you have a hard time believing that, we did have a president named Jimmy, and Jimmy Carter said, what are we going to do about inflation? And Mr. Volcker said, I'll take care of it, Mr. President, but it'll probably cost you the election. And it did. It was one of the contributing factors to why he lost. But Paul Volcker, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank, ratcheted up short-term interest rates, which broke the back of inflation. And what we saw is as inflation came down dramatically, bond rates came down and have continued to come down to the point where they're now even less than 2%. In 2011 and 12 and 13, now they're even below that, and inflation is down. Notice in 2009-10, inflation basically disappeared for just a year. Yeah.
When inflation is down, that's good for like the consumer.
It depends. It's a two-edged sword. We see the price of gasoline go up. We see the price of milk go up, and we say inflation is raging. But the biggest component of inflation, dear students, is wages. Are wages going up?
No.
No. Is housing going up? Well, just recently, but for several years it was going down. So housing and wages are two of the, well, wages are the biggest component. Housing is another very large component. And those have been going down. So it depends on where you're standing from. Is inflation a bad thing? Sure, too much inflation is horrible. But try deflation, where people are losing their jobs and prices are going down because people aren't making any money and they can't afford it, so the businesses have to lower their prices, which creates a spiral because the businesses are making less money and they can't pay the workers. You understand? And I remember hearing a talk from one very, very bright money manager who likened what the Federal Reserve Bank and some of the other banks in Europe and, well, Japan is joining the crew. He said they're going down a mountain on a toboggan slide. And they're sliding back and forth. And on one side, if they fall off the cliff, it's a 2,000-foot drop inflation. On the other side is a 2,000-foot cliff deflation. And we better hope that they don't fall off either one, because either one ain't good. Yeah.
So, like, in 05 there, that's when everybody thought. We were rich and everything.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it? It was great while it lasted, didn't it?
That's where we
want to
be, right?
Like, yeah, it's not an easy job. It's not an easy job. You know, some inflation is good, but too much is horrible. Okay, we're almost done. The yield curve is a graph. Well, or should be done because you guys want to leave. Okay. So we're ended. When we come back, we'll talk about the yield curve. We'll finish up chapter 10, calculations, studies. That's why I gave you two worksheets, okay? So you don't have to turn it in, but by Thursday, you should do worksheet number 2, problems 1, 2, and 3. We'll do problem number 4. We'll finish up chapter 10. Study hard. Bring honor and glory to Southwestern Community College.